Can't talk right now. I'm doing hot shaman stuff.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Extraneous.
We made it.
Materials.
We made it through the season.
Made it through the season of television.
It's so hard to make it through seasons of television these days. We don't go through three seasons of television every week.
I know. We're at so many parties and clubs and, you know.
Yeah, no.
That's us.
No. Anyway, I'm Melissa.
I'm Will.
And we are your hosts for Extraneous, this version of Extraneous, which focuses on His Dark Materials.
That's right. There is also one about Supernatural.
Still going on, despite the show ending. They're doing deep dives for the next, like, 4 months or something.
4 months, 5 months, 7 years. Whatever it takes.
Listen, it was like a 20-year show? 45
yeah,
seasons?
Yeah, it was 2005 it started. Can you believe that?
That's incredible. That's an achievement.
It's awesome. It's an awesome podcast. Check it out. Leah and Takiya are the experts you want for that journey. And you could find them... Do you see that transition?
That was wonderful.
On mischiefmedia.com. Tell us about mischiefmedia.com, Melissa.
Mischief Media is the network that you are listening to right now. It's people who love stories and can't stop talking about them, so make podcasts about them. We have a lot of great podcasts. You're listening to one right now. We also have Pottercast, Roll 9 3/4, Geek Girl Strong. Is the person who does Healthy Geek Academy. Listen, it's the first day back since the holidays ended, and I'm doing this after a full work day, so I'm a little punchy. It's going to be a fun record.
Absolutely. We should also mention that, guys, we have merch.
And I bet
just
they never knew that.
Just because the holidays are over doesn't mean... In fact, it means that you can finally buy merch for yourself again.
I bet... Grandma gave you some money or somebody gave you a little money. Treat yourself treat yourself to a Godric's Hollow sweatshirt.
Ooh.
Or a Jordan College sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Or a Lyman's Muffins and Bagels mug, which is one of my favorite things. It's all on mischiefmerch.com.
Mischiefmerch.com, mischiefmedia.com, His Dark Materials. Let's go.
All right. So what we're going to do this week, what are we going to do this week?
This week, we are going to just talk a little bit about the season of television that we just watched in general. I don't know why I keep saying season of television. But we're going to talk about HDM season 2. Last week, we talked about the finale episode specifically. This week, we've got a week to like process.
Yeah.
And we just want to go through some
do some wrap-ups. We're going to give some awards. We're going to give some honorable mentions. And then we're going to wrap up talking about this television series and get excited for The Subtle Knife, which, spoiler alert, we are actually not taking a break because we're just that extra. We're going to go right into the first two chapters of The Amber Spyglass next week on this feed.
Yeah, so get ready and get reading. And finally, we're talking to each other here because we keep wanting to do this and not getting to it. We are doing emails too.
Yes, we are.
If you send us an email, we can't wait to talk about those. We love getting them.
Yeah, we got lots of fun mailbag at the end of this show. So you can always send us an email with your thoughts about anything His Dark Materials or anything at all at extraneouspod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
All right.
Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right. So we want to start off positive. We want to balance some of our last week's mixed feelings with the positivity this week. And there's a lot to love. So we're going to talk about three things each of us loved about this series.
This season of this series. Of the Subtle Knife adaptation that just concluded.
Yeah. So, Melissa, you want to start?
Sure. My favorite thing about the season, 100%, was Mary Malone, period. Thought she was perfectly cast, perfectly played. Her dialogue and her additions to her character, we got to see her family. Mm-hmm. We got a couple of little extra grace notes into her history. And she was just so enchanting. I just wanted to hang out with her. I wanted to learn more about her. You absolutely believe that this was, you know, a former nun. I don't know how she gives off former nun, but there was a little bit of the former nun about her. But yeah, she was cool. She's drinking her beer. She's talking to angels. She's got her kicks on. She goes home and she gives her nephew and niece terrible food for them. And then she puts on her backpack and she deceives the guard and heads off to save the world. I mean, what's not to like?
What's not to like? I loved that she adds a little bit, I don't know the noun form of this, but she's a little sardonic.
Yes.
Here too.
Yes.
She's a little like, I like to think it's maybe a little bit of like Philip Pullman himself coming through, that like wry, skeptical personality, but also filtered through a woman who is clearly like one of the few women in a man's world in like experimental physics. I just thought that was so cool to see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mary Malone, played by Simone Kirby. Mm-hmm. Fantastic actress. I want to watch everything she does now. And as long as she always has that Irish accent.
Is she Irish?
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So what's one of the things that you loved?
I loved Pan.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought, first of all, every episode we talk about it, the stupid fat panda face.
Stupid fat panda face.
Is just wonderful. But I love that we got Pan changing a lot, like to fit the situation. I love that even though we see him change, and we see him change so effortlessly, like the effects on that were really beautiful.
Yeah.
He also had a few forms that he favored, and he seemed to be in different forms to match his mood, which is straight from the books, right? We see him in the books in all kinds of different shapes, from moth to leopard, snow leopard, you know? But he likes his panda form. In the book, he likes his ermine form, and we see him in that a lot. It was just really nice to see like a by-the-book Pan who talks to Lyra more, who argues with Lyra, who has some nice moments with Will. Mm-hmm. It was an awesome, awesome portrayal, and I think it really set us up for, obviously, the big thing that's coming in season 3. So
the big thing. Yeah, they spent a lot more time developing Pan. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Another thing I loved this season, female writers. The writing team was not just Jack Thorne. The writing team was diversified, and it showed. And it wasn't just female writers. It was diverse female writers. It was a team of really good women writers who softened and made somehow more whole the text. It wasn't literalism. It wasn't like Chris Columbus Harry Potter movies. It was more like Alfonso Cuarón Harry Potter movies. Mm-hmm. Sorry about it. I'm always going to make Harry Potter references. It's like our version of a drinking game. It's just what's going to happen. But it was much more show than tell.
Yeah.
When there were women involved. And I don't want to, like, who knows if it's causation or a correlation, but it feels an awful lot like causation. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say.
Yeah, totally agree. The writing on this season was way better than season 1. Obviously, we've talked about it a ton, but it bears repeating. Another thing I really liked, and this is something that I have had some time to think about, and I really have come around to seeing, I liked Boreal's portrayal on this. And specifically, I liked that they really explored Boreal's character and gave him some very concrete motivations that were sort of veiled in season 1 and veiled at the beginning of season 2. Mm-hmm. But by the end, sort of as he meets his demise, you know exactly what he wants and exactly why he's not going to be able to get it.
To a greater extent, I feel, than you do in the books. Or at least it's more complex and layered.
Yeah, 100%. Like, in the books, he really seems like sort of a plot device, or like either a plot device or like a stand-in for, you know, all the kind of forces of privilege and repression that Lyra and Will end up fighting. Like, he serves a purpose in the books, but he's much more of a device than a well-rounded character. Whereas in this, we see a lot of Boreal. We know what he loves. We know what he cares about. We know, you know, we see him being ridiculous. We see him being skillful. We see him at his worst, which I would say was killing Adele Morningstar.
Yes, absolutely.
Which we forget about, but like,
so that was season 1.
That was season 1, sure. But it's like the sort of whole, maybe even 2-season arc of Boreal, I find surprisingly fulfilling.
Yeah,
I loved
agreed.
It.
Agreed.
Yeah.
My third thing is the development of the relationship between Will and Lyra.
Oh, cool.
They spent a lot of time on it. It's clear they're doing it on purpose for season three, and that is time well spent. Sometimes a little overkill, but, you know, they spent a good chunk of time showing us these two people connecting emotionally, not just being thrown together and liking each other because of what they're going through, but the emotional journey, the small little talks they had, the way they trust each other, the looks they give each other. They really, well done on that front.
Yeah, completely agree. They're well-rounded characters. It's plausible, the fact that they're developing feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they've taken it slowly enough, but also spent the time to really show us that. Yeah, I loved it. And obviously the two performers are just
really good. Oh my gosh. Daphne Keen, we already knew, but Amir Wilson really killed it. I mean, because he had the more changing to do in this season.
Yeah.
When like Lyra says, I'm changing, it's like, well, but really it's Will who's going up and down and backwards and sideways.
Yeah, totally. And I was worried because Will didn't have a lot to do in season one, so we didn't get to see Amir Wilson act a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And we really do in this season. We see him, like, he's dynamic. He's a very physical character. You know, he's running and he's punching and he's, mm-hmm. he seems to do it all convincingly, like a remarkable but still sort of normal 14-year-old or 15-year-old kid.
Totally.
Yeah, loved it.
Your third thing.
My third thing that I loved was the reintroduction of Asriel in the finale.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we had a lot of issues with the finale, but when that voice starts and you haven't heard it in forever, in a whole season, for me, it was like it took me a second to realize who was speaking. Mm-hmm. We don't cut to him until the end. We see Yorick. We see Will. We see this motive, this beautifully written, by the way.
Yes.
Give Jack
Byrne
credit. Beautifully written, beautifully delivered dialogue. I just found that whole moment to be really dynamic filmmaking. Yeah. And really engaging and stirring and interesting. And if that is sort of the note that we're going to go on for the final, like if that's propelling us into season three, then I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, same. That was, yeah. Yes. The show don't tell of the gray hair, all of that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Agreed. Fully agreed.
Yeah.
Those are our top six moments. What are yours? Extraneouspod@gmail.com.
Tell us.
All right. Two things that neither of us loved.
All right.
Do you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. So I just praised the Asriel scene in the finale. I'm going to say the Lee Scoresby death scene.
Hmm. Oh, God. Do we have the same two things? Essentially,
we might. I have more than two things. Shocking.
Everyone's shocked.
The Lee Scoresby scene, obviously we talked about it a ton last week. I don't want to rehash all of it. It didn't really do the momentous nature of that scene justice. It just seemed too perfunctory. And the fact that Lee didn't succeed and that logistically the scene really didn't set up the stakes of, like, why didn't he just keep going up the mountain? Like, why didn't he just keep going with,
right?
We never really get a sense of why he can't do any of that. And the last stand nature of it, I don't know. And of course the death.
Yeah, one of mine was going to be, but I think I'm going to extrapolate this into my first thing that I really didn't like, was all the small plot holes. Mm-hmm. Lee losing, dying basically in vain. If you only follow the series, he definitely did a lot of good to keep, and they helped. But the whole thing of Lee's death is that it's a big last stand. He is this incredible figure alone on a hill who does it. He wins and then he dies, yeah. You know? And I know they needed a plot device as a different way to kill Jopari. Okay, fine. There's something lost in that. So not just that plot hole, but the, like, kids going up the mountain when they could have gone up the mountain the mm-hmm. whole time.
Yeah, like, why did they need Mary?
There's lots of little why moments. And in the beginning of the series, they seemed like they were being very careful about that sort of thing. But the lack of consistency as the episodes got later on, and especially in the finale, just felt really disappointing.
I agree. Yeah. You feel a little like you care about it more than they do, because like, how was this stuff not picked up in like a second or third draft of the script?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they did a million drafts of the script, right? Like, this is a major television show. They're not doing it all the night before. I don't mean to imply that, but still, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
They should have been cleaned up.
Yeah.
Another thing that I didn't like, and this maybe is more specific to me, and to be fair, it's something I don't like in a lot of shows by later seasons. I didn't like the inconsistency of the witches. And like, are they enough to single-handedly take out an entire platoon of soldiers with just a little knife? Or are they someone who Mrs. Coulter can like physically overpower and then kill by herself?
Right.
It seems like those two things are just incompatible. And just having the monkey jump on the demon, that's just not enough. Especially like the scene before, or like the episode or two before, we see Mrs. Coulter overpower her demon being, you know, beaten by Pan.
Right.
And it just seems like is Mrs. Coulter really that much more physically imposing and powerful than a witch? It just, the whole thing was inconsistent, and it didn't really seem interested in answering those questions. And that just bothered me, because it's hard to know the stakes of, okay, Lyra's with two witches, and the last time we saw a witch, they took out literally an entire ship.
Like a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time we've seen them fight, they take out single-handedly, like, basically all the soldiers. But then Mrs. Coulter shows up, and they all somehow die easily. Hmm. So, yeah, that just bugged me.
Cool. Fair enough.
Yeah.
My second thing is the sort of beat over the head nature we're getting now about Mrs. Coulter and her arc. I don't want to minimize the story of abuse. It's obviously very important to what's happening, but so much screen time has been spent on, isn't it dramatic how this woman doesn't have a good relationship with her demon, and isn't she damaged, and now she'd had a heavy conversation with Lisa, she's going to face a wall for a while and be nice to her demon. Now she walks down the stairs and she kicks her demon. And it's just like, we get it. They are in a twisted relationship. We totally get it. Enough. Show her doing things that advance the plot. I don't need to see her kicking her demon.
Right, exactly. Is she there to beat up her demon and be evil and kill witches, or is she there to save Lyra because she's changing?
Right. On the boat in the steamer trunk at the end, that was the most compelling. I have found Mrs. Coulter in a long time, but a couple of scenes before were, you know, her running around the cellar of the tower playing Love You, Hate You with the monkey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Completely agree. I think I'm...
Your position on this was so unclear before.
Yeah. Okay, so those are some things we didn't love. Still excited about the next season. We want to tick through a few little awards that we came up with.
Little awards.
For the series.
You Will made up these awards.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
All right, the first one.
He keeps tapping me because he gets so excited, and then it like comes up in the recording.
This is the thing that Melissa has to deal with on and off mic.
I keep having to tell him, like, hey, we're recording a podcast. You can't act like we're just hanging out on the couch.
I'm really annoying.
No.
So the first award is called the Glenn Close on the West Wing Award for your favorite small role.
Yes.
Shout out to Chief Justice. What's her name?
No. Evelyn Lang.
Evelyn Lang.
My God.
Yeah,
I almost forgot.
I know.
Evelyn Lang.
I love her mind. I love her shoes.
So who chewed the scenery in his Dark Materials this season?
I loved Yorick. I loved Yorick showing up, talking to the goose, having a little chat, doing a little exposition, a little situation that he does. Loved it.
Yeah, I did enjoy Yorick staying in the frame. I mean, hopefully it's because they are planning for him to be back in 3 for that scene where he fixes the knife, which would be a contender for them to like lose, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's why they're keeping Yorick in frame.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My award for this is the Spider Woman.
Yeah.
The Red Spider Woman, the Kiss of the Spider
Woman.
Kiss
of the Red Spider
Woman. She was on screen for, you know, like 30 seconds total, and she managed to connect two of the most powerful people in the series. She managed to drop hints about where powerful people were and who was staying where. This woman, you get the sense, has caused a lot of mischief in.
I was just thinking that. Yeah. She's like that goose we joke about in the game, where she's like,
honk.
I honk. Can I take back? I want the power honk to be my good thing.
There was no power honk. Oh, that's the thing.
Okay, that's the thing I didn't like.
It's a bad thing.
But yeah, she's just like, I am going to cause some trouble on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm a messy bitch that lives for drama.
And you know, because I have a red spider as a demon. Who didn't know? Look at my demon.
Yeah, and she has red hair and she has a bright red dress. Like,
am I the bad guy?
Yeah, exactly. Look at your life. Look at your choices.
All right. Next award.
Next award is the All Praise the Authority Award for your favorite world building aspect. Mine, I'll go first again, is the Magisterium and like the machinations of it, the backstabbing and the power grabs and the like 4chan message board equivalent that is their little council meetings.
4chan
and stuff.
Message board council. It's
the, like,
so
Proud
true.
Boys Discord channel.
Oh my God, it's so true.
It's like, what? Let's talk about some women that we don't like.
Truly, I believe that is what they think they are all. That's the kind of like grand conversation they think we're all having, and it's really like,
let's all name our favorite AK-47 type to impress a girl.
Oh God, that's terrible. Okay.
Anyway, but I liked it. I liked that we're getting the behind the scenes and we're seeing both like how ruthless they are, but also how petty they are. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that this is the cavil that's running the world is so depressing. And it gives you some understanding of like, oh, I'd much rather have, someone like Lyra or Will or Yorick making their own decisions about who they should be than this like small-minded group of sort of backstabbing dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So I liked it.
My Praise the Authority Award is to the cave. The way they translated the cave. I don't know about you guys, but when I read it, I really did imagine a dark room, a sort of like small projector on a wall connected to like the leads that you connect a car battery to that's connected to a computer. That's as grand as I thought this cave was. And then I watched the series like, no, they're measuring dark matter. Of course it's like that. Of course it's an electromagnetic field that's enormous and requires great funding.
Right.
But for some reason in my head, it was just, you know, like something you could have made in second grade. So I think they really did that right. I'm into it talking instead of typing. That was a great way to show it.
You know, the one scene I wish we could get somehow from the universe. I wish we could get a scene of Mary Malone explaining the cave to Sam Seaborn. Like that episode of The West Wing.
He gets things quickly.
Yeah.
Ah, so now the student becomes a teacher. No.
I teach you how to spell it.
Sit down very quiet. I can teach you how to spell it. All right, our Boreal in Memorial Award.
Boreal in Memorial.
Let's be honest. This is an award about our own self-satisfiedness with our own stupid puns. But if you've been listening
to ourselves
for this long, you know how much joy we took in the Boreal puns.
It's true.
So what is your favorite Boreal pun from this season of Dark Materials Experience?
It's like,
come on.
We've nominated a series. We're awarding a series of nominees to ourselves.
Or am I wrong? Where's the lie?
Not wrong. Okay. My favorite. I love Boreal's tutorial.
When he was in the...
Yeah, in the museum. Because mm-hmm. it goes to like such the heart of who Boreal is. He's like, my name's Boreal and I'd love to tell you about things because I know more than you do.
I am the chief mansplainer.
You know, he keeps trying to give tutorials to Mrs. Coulter. And Mrs. Coulter's like, I do not... This is not why I'm here, bro.
You mean like when he told her to calm down?
Yeah, Jesus.
And she was being hysterical. Yeah, I agree.
So Boreal, the tutorial.
That's good.
Yeah.
I loved when Boreal was out the Doriel. It made me very happy, whichever one, I truly don't remember which one of us said it, but the door opened and one of us was like, Boreal's out the Doriel, while we were watching it the first time, and we both just busted up and fell on the floor. And I am very proud of that.
Loved
I have
it.
No grand explanation. I just thought Boreal's out the Doriel.
It speaks for itself.
It's a pun.
Yeah.
The pun. Pun's got to be, the joy of a pun is in the pun.
That's right.
It's just in the pun itself. It's like a tautological
experiment. Pun is
experiment.
Its own reward.
Yeah. The pun is its own reward, always. All right.
All right.
That's it for season two.
Yeah. So long, season two. We'll see you in the in the old, I don't know.
But wait. We want to talk about season three briefly.
Yes, we do. We want to talk about some things we would love to see in the third season. I'm sure we will be talking more about this as we dive, like we said, into Amber Spyglass next week. But Melissa, tell me one thing that you would love to see.
Okay. One thing I'm looking forward to seeing, because I know they're going to do it, is pan separation, the separation of Will. And let's it's not really my answer, because of course they're doing it. If they didn't do it, why the hell are they even doing this series? Of course they're going to separate Will and Lyra on the shore, Lyra and Pan on the shores of the dead. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing how they do it. One thing I'm not sure they're going to do, but I would like to see them do, is when Mary... She doesn't actually see this, but she says that when she sees Will and Lyra come out of the cave, she knows that if she looks through the Amber Spyglass, they would have been made up of living gold. They would have been made up of dust. I'm hoping they visualize that. Yeah. I'm hoping we actually see that, because that is such a key, beautiful moment sentence when you read it that will be lost if they don't do it visually.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm just thinking about that could be really beautiful.
Like the Matrix. Yeah. Like gold.
And one thing, this show has never not been beautiful.
That's very true.
So that's exciting.
Yep.
On a related note, I am excited for the Muffly Bumps.
I don't know what you mean.
The Muffly Dooms.
Nope. Try again.
Muffly Bumps.
No.
The Muffle Bumps.
Yo, I'm calling it now. This is going to be the most insufferable part of the next season when we get to, or when.
I love this bit.
Or, I mean, gosh, we're starting the Amber Spyglass. He's just start writing down all the things that will cause the Muleffa from now.
Munificence.
No. Muleffa.
Muleffa.
The Muleffa. I'm Muleffa. Excited for them too.
Yeah.
I'm excited that the people who thought a goose would be too silly.
It's like, what are you going to do now?
Are now like, it's fine. We can do the wheelie zebra antelope things.
Can you imagine the
motorcycle antelopes?
And stuff. Yeah. Like, you want what?
It's one
you
wheel.
Want us to do what?
It's one wheel and they it's very complicated. But mm-hmm. I love the Muleffa and they're very important. And if they go down in importance, I'll be very mad.
I agree. I'm super excited for those. What else are you excited for?
The Bartholomew and Baruch story.
Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful side plots in the series. It ties up another plot line very handily, but most importantly, even though angels are genderless, sexualityless, supposedly, whatever, they are very clearly in love. They are very clearly portrayed as male. And it's a cool queer storyline in the middle of his dark materials.
Yeah.
And they're in such love. They're in such... Their pieces of dust were made for the other's pieces of dust mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. It's maybe the most pure expression of love in the books.
Yeah, it really is, because it's complicated and it's mm-hmm. not always pretty. It's like a long married couple with as much resentments as affections.
Yeah, imagine if marriage was a millennia or
right.
two or
oh
three
gosh.
Or four or 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm optimistic, too. Like, the queer aspect of it, I really have no concerns that they would show.
I hope not. I mean, the BBC is usually pretty...
I think now, yeah. And especially, like, I think the people involved in this show are really... I don't know. I get the sense it's, like, a good progressive... Like, they're committed to showing that aspect.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're talking about... negative capabilities
right
on this show.
They're embracing some of this stuff.
They're getting us you know,
the hard stuff.
I don't even mean hard. I mean they're not flinching in terms of Keats and the cave and dark matter and blah 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 blah. Why would a queer love story, well, we all know why, but let's hope that a queer love story doesn't trip them up.
Yeah we'll see. Another thing I am looking forward to, and this is all the way at the end, is Ruta Scotti and her dudes being witches, with lit torches just attacking like the Mountain of Heaven.
Yes.
And basically that entire final battle scene, which if
yes.
I'm really hoping they go big on, they spend some time on,
yes.
like it's... I was actually a little disappointed in the book by how much the battle is like in the background.
I know. Will and Lyra kind of sideswipe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. It's the sort of angular storytelling that Philip Pullman loves to do. And I appreciate that. But I would love a little bit of the big blockbuster, big number of you know, heaven and earth squaring off in an epic battle.
Yeah, totally.
Led Zeppelin in the background, something like that.
Yeah. Right.
So that and many more reasons we are super psyched for season 3.
All right, well, shall we do our mailbag?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, our first email. Our first email is from Isabel. Isabel says that they just found our HDM podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome, Isabel. We're having a lot of fun here. Read the books, but it's been a while. They're going to read them again. Follow along with us on the Amber Spyglass. Love to hear it.
Yes.
Isabel says, key changes in the series make me wonder if the series may do the almost unthinkable and alter the ending based on two modifications. And the details are that Will is left his mother with the boxing, like an able-bodied boxing coach instead of an elderly piano teacher, basically his mother's cared for. And that John Parry's condition of being weakened by existing in one world for too much is never mentioned. He's a little gray, he's a little tired, but they never mention it. So they had the opportunity to set up how important it is for them to not be in the same world forever. But could they be gearing up to change that ending and leave them in the same world forever?
It's a really good question. And the textual evidence, the on-screen evidence, whatever, that she provides makes it possible. My one caveat is they're really building up the bench. You know, they really went out of their way to draw attention to the botanical gardens.
Yes.
And, you know, they did kill Roger. Like, they have left the sad stuff in so far. Mm-hmm. All of it. Lee's death, Roger's death. I think this story would maybe lose something. And also, if you leave them together, I think that also makes it much more difficult to adapt the future books. And I don't know if they would ever want to do that.
Oh,
but like,
wow.
Right. There's implications because there's a second trilogy.
It's also just if you take a really earned, sad, melancholy, beautiful ending and kind of make it pat and easy, you're really dismissing the story he was writing, the sacrifice that they make. So to be fair, Isabella doesn't really think this is going to happen either, but was wondering what we thought. And I think we're all in agreement that it'll stay the same.
I think it'll stay the same, but it's a great question and it's a real possibility. I think we're just going to have to find out
next year, this time. All right. Ella wrote us an email. Ella had a couple of, we'll say kvetches about the finale, same ones that we had about the season. The Spectres being able to fly without Mrs. Coulter's assistance, Angelica and Paola running up the mountain by themselves.
Yeah.
Quote, that creepy hint of Sweet Baby Roger in the World of the Dead reassured me. I too am worried about how short the next season will be and was concerned that they may cut out those inter-chapter scenes of Will and Lyra, you know, talking to each other and being in the dead. So that, I agree, that is reassuring. Mm-hmm. Ella also wonders what our predictions are for Fra Pavel and whether we think he's going to follow the same course that he did in the book, or do we think not so much?
I think he's going to follow a similar quest. I think he's going to have an arc, a tragic arc, I think.
Every time I mention something that happens in Amber Spyglass, I can't believe they're only doing this in 8 episodes. Are they crazy?
Yeah.
So what happens in the book, and again, please, spoilers, y'all know this. They try to put Marissa Coulter in the machine that they make to target Lyra, and she gets out of it. And so he does it. He sacrifices himself. He throws his demon in one side, himself in the other, and does the cut so that it can power this basically nuclear bomb that they've targeted to Lyra's hair. quick note. We've done this before. We keep talking about Father McPhail when Fra Pavel gets mentioned, because they keep giving us FPs and it's really dumb. Huh. Fra Pavel, you know, I think I believe Ella meant Father McPhail because Fra Pavel just reads the alethiometer and he's not really that important.
Right.
It's Father McPhail who we're talking about, who is elected the head of the magisterium, the president in the books, and hurls himself into this machine in, you know, so just a note.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
So what happens in the book is that Lyra had a piece of her hair cut, we think, by Mrs. Coulter. I think Mrs. Coulter was wearing it in a locket. And the remaining piece of hair on her, she's advised to cut that piece of hair off because that's what the bomb is following. And they cut that piece of hair off. They put the hair into another world and close that off so that the bomb will find that hair instead of Lyra herself. It's a little goofy.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah.
It reads better on the page than in summary.
Totally.
It's such a big scene. And when you read it, they talk a lot about the landscape and it's like, it's mm-hmm. at night and it's in the middle of a storm and they're next to like a waterfall. I think because they need the hydropower, but they're like in the Alps or something like that.
Sure.
It would be wild to see that on screen. That all also indicates like this could be a very expensive scene.
Very expensive.
So yeah, I would love to get all that. It does, though, now that we've sort of stepped through it all, if I was looking for something to cut, because I had 8 episodes to tell the story, yeah.
I'd find a different way for Father MacPhail to give himself to the cause.
Yeah, I do think he's headed for a martyr's death, what he would think of as a martyr's death, but it might be something a little less elaborate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah wrote us an email. Sarah says, do we have any thoughts about the feather that John Parry was playing with in the balloon? She wondered if it was Yuta Kaimanen's. I think it's his demons. I think it's Cyan Kotor's feather.
Yeah, it could be. Remind me, was this right before he does the thing summoning all the birds?
He's sort of playing with that feather all the time. He's playing with it in the balloon mostly. When he was summoning all the birds, he was sort of like hunched over and doing the kind of thing.
His woo-woo.
Woo, his woo.
His crystals work and such.
I think it was a colorful detail that somebody said, hey, hold on to this feather.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, shaman stuff.
Yeah, shaman stuff. Hot shaman stuff. Can't talk right now. I'm doing hot shaman stuff. Okay. Last email from Devin. We cannot read it all here because it's long and it's the most extra email we've ever gotten and it's amazing.
We love extra.
Love it. So thank you. But a very interesting theory that Mrs. Coulter, it's not exactly sexual assault that she has experienced, but that she, the kind of culture this is based on, her history is based on, is evangelical purity culture. Basically the patriarchal fundamentalist Christian movement. Devin says this can explain all of Mrs. Coulter's actions, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I completely support this explanation. I think it totally makes sense. It didn't seem from her discussion with Lee that she was like specifically sexually abused,
right,
so much as she was like physically and emotionally abused in the context of like a fairly extreme religious.
I think because neither of us grew up in a fundamentalist background, it's hard to see what Mrs. Coulter is like now and see how a non, you know, it was just easier for us to say, well, this person was clearly suffered some of the worst type of abuse and ascribe it to sexual abuse. But the Devin's email was fantastic. They said the teachings from this movement rippled. First of all, Devin said they grew up in this culture. The teachings from this movement rippled out into the broader culture in a lot of ways. But for those of us who grew up in the sheltered heart of the churches that taught and enforced, quote, purity, well, let's just say it fucks you up. And that is a couple of supporting points. It puts all the burden for sexual purity of all genders on women's shoulders. Mm-hmm. It teaches that once you've lost your purity, no matter how you lost your purity, you are forever ruined and worthless. That is the only marker upon which you have value. It teaches you to distrust your own intuition and heart, that just the act of wanting something makes it wrong. It teaches you to fear and hate sexual desire, and it silences women's voices and intellect unless it can co-opt them, which sounds distinctly Coulterian.
It totally does, yeah. And I could say I'm in the middle of the third Cromwell novel, and this sounds like a mentality that would fit right in the court of Henry VIII.
Ooh.
It's that sort of like medieval thinking.
The Cromwell novels being the ones written by Hilary Mantel.
Yes.
Phenomenal. I'm on page 50 after 4 months, but I can already tell they're incredible.
Yeah. And speaking of incredible, man, It's been incredible. See, I'm so good at these now.
She's so good at the transitions. It's astonishing.
It's been incredible going through another season of the show.
We made it.
Yeah.
We did two books and two seasons, and we next week are starting Amber Spyglass.
We're so excited. Chapter one.
And two.
Chapter two.
Were you about to say chapter two? You just sounded so, because I know your pattern so well, you just sounded so chapter one, like you were done.
Nope.
No.
That's okay.
I didn't.
That's okay.
I didn't
we'll work on this credit. For next week.
I didn't give him enough credit.
Getting into Muffle Bumps and
Malefa.
Muffle Dupes.
I can, babe, I can hear how tired they are of this joke already, just so you know.
Write in and tell me how funny you think this bit is, and I'll write back and tell you I agree.
That's going to go really well. Extraneouspod@gmail.com. It has been a delight going through all this with you. We'll see you on our Twitters, on our Instagrams, on all the things, and in the email. And if you don't want to interact with us on social media, know what you can still do.
You can still write to me personally.
No.
Tell me, no, just kidding. You could stay.
Extra.
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 Extra. Extra. Read all about it.